who went and got from eyewitness accounts the things which they believed. And then John, another apostle, giving it his own perspective. The whole textual criticism aspect, it's just a bunch of people who have no faith, using that unbelief as a premise for, as an assumption on which, you know, like, let's say that Jesus in Luke 21, talking about the destruction of Jerusalem. Now, a person who doesn't believe is going to say, well, that had to be written after the city was destroyed. Because how could he have known? But that's an incredibly cynical view. I mean, even if Jesus had no supernatural powers, you know, some people could have predicted, there were people probably who were predicting that terrorists would fly planes into buildings. You know, and maybe the higher-ups didn't recognize it at the time, but there were people who knew that this was something that they had in mind. It just didn't get communicated to the right people to stop it. And I'm sure a lot of people in Jesus' day had a sense with this Roman domination and stuff that they were in a tenuous position. And it wouldn't be hard to read the handwriting on the wall if they kept coming into conflict with the Romans. And having rejected him in his way, in his kingdom, he knew the outcome. And, you know, but what I'm saying is, like, you don't even have to admit the supernatural to think that Jesus could have predicted that. It's not like that far out of a prediction. The Jews were a very stubborn people who believed they were God's chosen people, and they were, according to our belief, right? I'm talking about from the Roman perspective, they were these people, they thought they were God's chosen people, God told them this, God told them that, so they had this feeling that they could overcome the Romans with enough, if God was on their side. And he was definitely on their side. So they kept coming into conflict. And they kept revolting. And so the destruction of their city, unless they found a different way to worship God, it was inevitable. And in retrospect, we can look back at that. But if someone prior to it happening saw it, it's not so remarkable. I mean, it's remarkable. But it doesn't even have to be miraculous. And I'm not saying that it wasn't. Christ knew because he's divine. But the fact that he knew is no reason to assume that this was written down after. And that's how they start. They start by presuming, well, nothing in the Bible could have been written, at least none of the Gospels, before the destruction of the temple, the destruction of Jerusalem, because they mention it, and so it has to be after. And that is just, they use the text against it. So prophecy becomes, that's like saying Isaiah 53 must have been added after Jesus, because it speaks of him. And you know what? They don't talk about it anymore because of the Dead Sea Scrolls. But things like Isaiah 22 and Isaiah 53, people used to think, well, they probably changed the scriptures after Jesus in order to make them fit. And in fact, the Jews did change the scriptures. Isaiah 22 in the Masoretic text says, a lion, my hands and feet. A lion, my hands and feet. When in the Dead Sea Scrolls, we find that it says, they pierced my hands and feet. And that's what it said before Jesus was crucified. Because that goes back to before his era. So we know that men will change it. But they're very, like, the way they changed it to a lion is so subtle. It's just like the twist of a little line. You know, it's like changing a P into an R. Not directly that, but I mean that kind of a maneuver. Just put a little thing here. Change, you know, I'm trying to think of a word in English that would be, but you know, we're changing here, lion, we're changing pierced to lion. Just put a little change in the vowel pointing or the consonant slightly, and new word. Problem solved. They pierced my hands and feet. That sounds too much like Christ. That was written 1,000 years before Jesus was born, that they would pierce. You read Psalm 22, you're reading something 3,000 years old. You're reading ideas, prophecies, 3,000 years old. So if Christ prophesied something so close, it's no reason to assume it was written down after. Unless you're just someone who's an unbeliever who's just out to destroy other people's faith because you're bitter about yours. And that's basically what it comes down to, is their bitterness. All these people who make it their life and their living to study and try to destroy the scriptures. And it's funny. And also, like, you look on things like YouTube, how many atheists are who are, their whole business is talking about Christianity. Their whole focus. I think it's like, my God, I've never seen as much of a Bible and Jesus and Christianity obsessed people than these. I think, what must motivate them? What must motivate them? I don't entirely know. You know, I mean, I could guess at some things, and I'm sure it would be true for some. You know, I don't always say things to mean absolutely, but I'm sure it's true for some, right? Some bitter people out there. Verse 63, and the men that held Jesus mocked him and smote him. And when they had blindfolded him, they struck him on the face and asked him, saying, prophesy, who is it that smote thee? And many other things blasphemously spake they against him. And as soon as it was day, the elders of the people and the chief priests and the scribes came together and led him into their council, saying, art thou the Christ? Tell us. And he said unto them, if I tell you, you will not believe. And if I also ask you, you will not answer me, nor let me go. Hereafter shall the Son of Man sit on the right hand of the power of God. Then said they all, art thou then the Son of God? And he said unto them, you say that I am. And they said, what need we of any further witness? For we ourselves have heard of his own mouth. So we see the mistreatment. You know, Christ's temptation here is to destroy these people. Prophesy, who is it that smote thee? I know it's you, Matan. I know it's you, Malchus. But he says nothing. As a sheep before his shearers is dumb, so he opened not his mouth. He did speak, but he did not speak in his defense. He did not try to defend himself, or to relieve himself, or somehow get out of it. They spoke many other things blasphemously against him, and they really laid it into him. You know, if they have, and consider this, it is given you on the behalf of Christ not only to believe on him, but to suffer for his name's sake. If that's how they treated your master, how are they going to treat you if you truly stand up for righteousness? If you truly stand up for the truth, the world is going to hate you. The world religion, and this is all in, these are all religious people. These are the high priest's servants. This isn't Pontius Pilate and his buddies and the Romans. This isn't the Romans. This was Christ's own people, the most devout Jews in the nation at the time. And I tell you, in any nation, the Jewish nation, the Christian nation, the devout men, some of the most known to be devout men are some of the most wicked men.